Chapter 14, Night Flying. The intent of this chapter is to introduce only the major aspects of night flying to the pilot who has flown only in daylight. These elements include a brief description of night visual perception, suggested pilot equipment, airplane lighting and equipment, airport lighting, and the various night flight operations, as well as basic pilot techniques. Night flying is considered to be an important phase in the complete training of a pilot. Proficiency in night flying not only increases utilization of the airplane, but it provides important experience in case an intended day flight inadvertently extends into darkness. Night flying is really not difficult, but it differs from daylight operation in that vision is restricted at night. This instills a certain amount of anxiety in pilots who lack night flying experience. These apprehensions can be overcome only by acquiring the necessary knowledge and experience in night operation. As confidence is gained through experience, many pilots prefer night flying over day flying because the air is usually smoother and generally there is less air traffic to contend with. Before attempting night operations, it is recommended that a complete and thorough checkout by a competent flight instructor be accomplished. This checkout should include a night cross-country flight with landings at airports other than the home field. Night vision. Generally, many persons are completely uninformed about night vision, while others feel there is nothing to be learned about the subject. Human eyes never function as effectively at night as the eyes of animals with nocturnal habits, but if a human learns to use the eyes correctly, night vision can be improved greatly. There are several reasons for the training and practice necessary to use the eyes correctly. One reason is that the mind and eyes act as a team for a person to see well. Both team members must be used effectively. Also, the construction of the eyes is such that to see at night, they must be used differently than during the daytime. Therefore, it is important for the pilot to understand the eye's construction and how the eye is affected by darkness. Innumerable light-sensitive nerves called cones and rods are located at the back of the eye or retina, a layer upon which all images are focused. These nerves connect to the cells of the optic nerve, which transmit messages directly to the brain. The cones are located in the center of the retina, and the rods are concentrated in a ring around the cones. The function of the cones is to detect color, details, and faraway objects. The rods function when something is seen out of the corner of the eye, peripheral vision. They detect objects, particularly those which are moving, but do not give detail or color, only shades of gray. Both the cones and the rods are used for vision during daylight. Although there is no clear-cut division of function, generally speaking, the rods make night vision possible. The rods and cones function in daylight and in moonlight, but in the absence of these, the process of vision is placed almost entirely on the rods. The fact that the rods are distributed in a band around the cones and do not lie directly behind the pupils makes off-center viewing, or looking to one side of an object, important during night flight. During daylight, an object can be seen best by looking directly at it. But at night, a scanning procedure to permit off-center viewing of the object is more effective. Therefore, the pilot should consciously practice this scanning procedure to improve night vision. The eye's adaptation to darkness is another important aspect of night vision. When a dark room is entered, it is difficult to see anything until the eyes become adjusted to the darkness. Most everyone has experienced this after entering a darkened movie theater. In this process, the pupils of the eyes first enlarge to receive as much of the available light as possible. After approximately 5 to 10 minutes, the cones become adjusted to the dim light, and the eye becomes 100 times more sensitive to the light than they were before the dark room was entered. Much more time, about 30 minutes, is needed for the rods to become adjusted to the darkness. But when they do adjust, they are about 100,000 times more sensitive to light than they were in the lighted area. After the adaptation process is complete, much more can be seen, especially if the eyes are used correctly. This entire process is reversed when a bright area is entered from a dark room. The eyes are first dazzled by the brightness, but become completely adjusted in a very few seconds, thereby losing their adaptation to the dark. Now, if the dark room is re-entered, the eyes must again go through the long process of adapting to the darkness. The adaptation process of the eyes must be considered by the pilot before and during night flight. First, the eyes must be allowed to adapt to the low level of light, and then they must be kept adapted. After the eyes have become adapted to darkness, the pilot must avoid exposing them to any bright white light, which will cause temporary blindness and could result in serious consequences. Temporary blindness caused by an unusually bright light may result in illusions or afterimages during the time the eyes are recovering from the brightness. The brain creates these illusions reported by the eyes. This results in misjudging or incorrectly identifying objects, such as mistaking slanted clouds for the horizon or populated areas for a landing field. Vertigo is experienced by the pilot as a feeling of dizziness and imbalance, which in itself can create or increase illusions. The illusions seem very real, and pilots of any level of experience and skill can be affected. Recognizing that the brain and eyes can play tricks in this manner is the best protection for the pilot flying at night. Good eyesight depends on physical condition. Fatigue, colds, vitamin deficiency, alcohol, stimulants, smoking, or medication can seriously impair the pilot's vision. Keeping these facts in mind and taking adequate precautions should safeguard the pilot's night vision. In review, and in addition to the principles previously discussed, the following will aid the pilot in increasing night vision effectiveness. 1. Adapt the eyes to darkness prior to flight and keep them adapted. About 30 minutes is needed to adjust the eyes to maximum efficiency after exposure to a bright light. 2. Close one eye when exposed to bright light to help avoid the blinding effect. 3. Do not wear sunglasses after sunset. 4. Move the eyes more slowly than in daylight. 5. Blink the eyes if they become blurred. 6. Concentrate on seeing objects. 7. Force the eyes to view off-center. 8. Maintain good physical condition. And 9. Avoid smoking, drinking, and using drugs which may be harmful. Pilot equipment. The pilot, before beginning a night flight, should carefully consider certain personal equipment that should be readily available during the flight. This equipment may not differ greatly from that needed for a day flight, but the importance of its availability when needed at night cannot be overemphasized. At least one reliable flashlight is recommended as standard equipment on all night flights. A D-cell size flashlight with a bulb switching mechanism that can be used to select white or red light is preferable. The white light is for use while performing the pre-flight visual inspection of the airplane, and the red light for use in performing cockpit operations. Since the red light is non-glaring, it will not impair night vision. Some pilots prefer two flashlights, one with a white light for pre-flight, and the other a pen light type with a red light. The latter can be suspended by a string from around the neck to ensure that the light is always readily available during flight. One word of caution. If a red light is used for reading an aeronautical chart, the red features of the chart will not show up. Just as for daylight flights, aeronautical charts are essential for night cross-country flight, and if the intended course is near the edge of the chart, the adjacent chart also should be available. The lights of cities and towns can be seen at surprising distances at night. And if this adjacent chart is not available to identify those landmarks which lie off the primary chart, confusion could result, particularly if the pilot strays off course. To prevent losing essential items in the dark cockpit, the pilot should have a clipboard or map board on which charts, navigation logs, and other essentials can be fastened. Map cases in which to store needed materials should also be considered. A reliable clock is essential for both day and night flights. Regardless of what is used, organization of the equipment and material in the cockpit into a simple, well-arranged manner eases the burden on the pilot and certainly enhances safety. Airplane lighting and equipment. Federal Aviation Regulations, Part 91, specify certain minimum airplane equipment required for night flight. This equipment includes instruments, lights, electrical energy source, and spare fuses. Though not required by FAR Part 91, it is recommended, because of the limited outside visual references during night flight, that other flight instruments supplement those required. An operable attitude indicator, heading indicator, and sensitive altimeter are very valuable in controlling the airplane at night. Individual instrument lights, along with adequate cockpit illumination, aid significantly in making night flying a safe and pleasurable operation. An anti-collision light system, including a flashing or rotating beacon and position lights, is required airplane equipment. Airplane position lights are arranged similar to those of boats and ships. A red light is positioned on the left wingtip, a green light on the right wingtip, and a white light on the tail. This arrangement provides a means by which pilots can determine the general direction of movement of other airplanes in flight, just as sailors determine the direction of boats and ships. If both a red and green light of another airplane are observed, the airplane would be flying in a general direction toward the pilot seeing the lights and could be on a collision course. If only a red light is seen, the airplane is traveling from right to left in relation to the observing pilot. On the other hand, if only a green light is observed, the airplane is traveling from left to right. Landing lights are not only useful for taxi, takeoff, and landings, but they also provide a means by which your airplane can be seen by other pilots during flight. FAA has initiated a voluntary pilot safety program, Operation Lights On, to enhance the see and be seen concept of averting collisions both in the air and on the ground, and to reduce bird strikes. All pilots are encouraged to turn on their landing lights when operating within 10 miles of any airport, day and night, in conditions of reduced visibility, and in areas where flocks of birds may be expected. Although turning on aircraft lights does enhance the see and be seen concept, pilots should not become complacent about keeping a sharp lookout for other aircraft. At times, aircraft lights blend in with stars in the sky or the lights of the cities and go unnoticed unless a conscious effort is made to distinguish them from other lights. With the increase in the number of radio navigation aids and communication facilities, it is also recommended that the airplane be equipped with at least one radio navigation receiver and indicator and two-way radio communication capability. Most personal general aviation airplanes manufactured today are equipped with all items recommended in this chapter and perhaps more, and add much to the safety of night flight. Airport and navigation lighting aids. The light systems used for airports, runways, obstructions, and other visual aids at night are other important aspects of night flying. Lighted airports located away from congested areas can be identified readily at night by the lights outlining the runways. However, airports located near or within large cities are often difficult to identify in the maze of lights. It is important not only to know the exact location of these airports relative to the city, but also to be able to identify these airports by the characteristics of their lighting pattern. Aeronautical lights are designed and installed in a variety of colors and configurations, each having its own purpose. Although some are used during low ceiling and visibility, IFR, conditions, this discussion includes only the lights that are fundamental to VFR night operation. It is recommended that prior to night flight, particularly cross-country, the pilot check the availability and status of lighting systems at airports along the planned route and the destination airport. This information can be found on aeronautical charts and in the airport facility directory, and the status of each facility can be determined by reviewing pertinent notices to airmen. A rotating beacon is used to indicate the location of an airport. Its vertical light distribution is such that it can be seen most effectively from 1 to 3 degrees above the horizontal. However, the light can also be seen well above and below this range. The beacon rotates at a constant speed, thus producing what appears to be a series of light flashes at regular intervals. These flashes may be 1 or 2 different colors, which are used to identify various types of landing areas. For example, alternating white and green, lighted land airports, white alone, unlighted land airports, and green alone, sometimes installed as an aid to find a not-too-distant white and green beacon. Military airports also have beacons flashing alternately white and green, but are differentiated from civil airports by dual-peaked, or 2 quick white flashes between the intermittent green flashes. Obstructions, or areas considered hazardous to aerial navigation, are indicated by beacons producing red flashes. Steady burning red lights are used to mark obstructions on or near airports, and sometimes to supplement flashing lights on en route obstructions. High-intensity flashing white lights are now being used to mark some supporting structures of overhead transmission lines which stretch across rivers, chasms, and gorges. These high-intensity lights are also used to identify tall structures, such as chimneys and towers, that are considered to be obstructions to air navigation. As a result of the technological advancements in aviation, many runway lighting systems have become quite sophisticated to accommodate takeoffs and landings in various weather conditions. However, the pilot whose flying is limited to VFR conditions need be concerned only with the following basic lighting of runways and taxiways. The basic runway lighting system consists of 2 straight parallel lines of runway edge lights defining the lateral limits of the runway. These lights are aviation white, although aviation yellow may be substituted for a distance of 2,000 feet from the far end of the runway to indicate a caution zone. At some airports, the intensity of the runway edge lights can be adjusted to satisfy the individual needs of the pilot. The longitudinal limits of the runway are defined by straight lines of lights across the runway ends. At some airports, the runway threshold lights are aviation green, and the runway end lights are aviation red. At many airports, the taxiways also are lighted. A taxiway edge lighting system consists of omnidirectional blue lights which outline the usable limits of taxi paths. Caution must be observed when taxiing, particularly at airports that are not equipped with taxiway lights. The use of the airplane's landing or taxiing lights is essential under these conditions. Preparation and pre-flight. Night flying requires that pilots have a complete realization of their abilities and limitations and observe more caution than during day operations. Although careful planning of any flight is essential for maximum safety and efficiency, night flying demands more attention to all details of pre-flight preparation and planning. Preparation for a night flight should include a thorough study of the available weather reports and forecasts, with particular attention given to temperature dew point spread because of the possibility of formation of ground fog during the night flight. Also, emphasis should be placed on awareness of wind direction and speed, since drifting cannot be detected as readily at night as during the day. On night cross-country flights, pertinent aeronautical charts should be selected, including the appropriate adjacent charts. Course lines should be drawn in black so as to be more distinguishable, and direction, distances, and time estimates accurately recorded. Aeronautical charts should be folded and systematically arranged prior to flight in a manner that they will be convenient to use in the cockpit. Prominently lighted checkpoints along the prepared course should be noted. Rotating beacons at airports, lighted obstructions, lights of cities or towns, and lights from major highway traffic all provide excellent visual checkpoints. The use of radio navigation aids and communication facilities adds significantly to the safety and efficiency of the night flight and should be considered in pre-flight planning. All personal equipment should be checked prior to flight to ensure proper functioning. It is very disconcerting to find, at the time of need, that a flashlight, for example, doesn't work. A thorough pre-flight check of the airplane and a review of its systems and emergency procedures is of particular importance for night operations. Since each airplane has its own checklist, it is not intended in this chapter to cover all the specific points. However, there are some general areas, in addition to those involved on all flights, that should be included on the night pre-flight check. All airplane lights should be turned on momentarily and checked for operation. Position lights can be checked for loose connections by tapping the light fixture while the light is on. If the lights blink while being tapped, further investigation to determine the cause should be initiated. The parking ramp should be examined prior to entering the airplane. During the day, it is quite easy to see stepladders, chuck holes, stray wheel chocks, and other obstructions, but at night it is more difficult, and a check of the area can prevent taxiing mishaps. Starting, taxiing, and run-up. After the pilot is seated in the cockpit and prior to starting the engine, all items and materials to be used on the flight should be arranged in such a manner that they will be readily available and convenient to use. The airplane manufacturer's recommended engine starting procedures should always be followed. However, extra caution should be taken at night to assure that the propeller area is clear. Turning the rotating beacon on, or flashing other airplane lights, will serve to alert any person nearby to remain clear of the propeller. To avoid excessive drain of electrical current from the battery, it is recommended that unnecessary electrical equipment should be kept off until after the engine has been started. Before starting the engine, the aircraft's position lights should be turned on and checked for operation. The check can be made by observing the lights glow on the ground under the wingtips and the tail. After starting and before taxiing, the taxi or landing light should be turned on. However, continuous use of the landing light with the low power settings normally used for taxiing may place an excessive burden on the airplane's electrical system. Also, overheating of the landing light bulbs could become a problem because of inadequate airflow to carry away the excessive heat generated. Therefore, it is recommended generally that landing lights be used only intermittently while taxiing, but sufficiently to assure that the taxi area is clear. While using the lights during taxiing, consideration should be given to other airplanes so as not to blind the pilots with the landing lights. Taxi slowly, particularly in congested areas, and if taxi lines are painted on the ramp or taxiway, these lines should be followed to ensure a proper path along the route. The pre-takeoff run-up should be performed using the airplane's checklist, and each item should be checked carefully. The proper functioning of any of the airplane components must never be taken for granted. During the day, unintentional forward movement of the airplane can be detected quite easily, but at night, the airplane could creep forward without being noticed unless the pilot is alert, especially for this possibility. Therefore, it is important to lock the brakes during the run-up and attention be given to any unintentional forward movement. Takeoff and departure climb. Although night flying is very little different from day flying, it does demand more attention of the pilot. The most impressive difference is the limited availability of outside visual references. Therefore, the flight instruments should be used to a greater degree in controlling the airplane. This is particularly true on night takeoffs and departure climbs. The cockpit lights should be adjusted to a minimum brightness that will allow the pilot to read the instruments and switches and yet not hinder the pilot's outside vision. This also will eliminate light reflections on the windshield and windows. Before taxiing onto an active runway for takeoff, the pilot should exercise extreme caution to prevent conflict with other aircraft. even at controlled airports where the control tower issues the clearance for takeoff. It is recommended that the pilot check the final approach course for approaching aircraft. At uncontrolled airports, it is recommended that a slow 360-degree turn be made in the same direction as the flow of air traffic while closely searching for other aircraft in the vicinity. After ensuring that the final approach and runway are clear of other air traffic, the airplane should be lined up with the center line of the runway. If the runway has no painted center line, the pilot can use the runway lighting and align the airplane midway between and parallel to the two rows of runway edge lights. After the airplane is aligned, the heading indicator should be noted or set to correspond to the known runway direction. To begin the takeoff, the brakes should be released and the throttle smoothly advanced to takeoff power. As the airplane accelerates, it should be kept moving between and parallel to the runway edge lights. This can best be done by looking at the more distant runway lights rather than those close in and to the side. The technique for night takeoffs is the same as for normal daytime takeoffs, but the flight instruments should be monitored more closely. As the airspeed reaches the normal liftoff speed, the pitch attitude should be adjusted to that which will establish a normal climb by referring to both outside visual references, such as lights, and to the attitude indicator. The airplane should not be forcibly pulled off the ground. It is best to let it fly off in the liftoff attitude while cross-checking the attitude indicator against any outside visual references that may be available. After becoming airborne, the darkness of night often makes it difficult to note whether the airplane is getting closer to or farther from the surface. It is extremely important, then, to ensure that the airplane continues in a positive climb and does not settle back to the runway. This can be accomplished by ensuring that there is a climb rate on the vertical speed indicator and a gradual but continual increase in the altimeter indication. It is also important to note that the airspeed is well above the stall speed and that it continues to accelerate. Necessary pitch adjustments to establish a stabilized climb should be made with reference to the attitude indicator. At the same time, the wings should be checked for a level attitude using the attitude indicator and the heading indicator. It is recommended that no turn be made until reaching a safe maneuvering altitude. Although the use of the landing lights provides help during the takeoff roll, they become ineffective after the airplane has climbed to an altitude where the light beam no longer extends to the surface. The light can also be deceptive when it is reflected by haze, smoke, or fog that might exist in the takeoff climb. Therefore, if the landing light is used for the takeoff roll, it may be turned off after the climb is well established. Orientation and navigation. On night flights, pilots should be aware of the importance of being alert and looking for other aircraft. The pilot should be able to recognize the airplane's position relative to other aircraft by the color combination of the other aircraft's position lights. Generally, at night it is difficult to see clouds and restrictions to visibility, particularly on dark nights or under an overcast. The pilot flying under visual flight rules, VFR, must exercise caution to avoid flying into clouds or a layer of fog. Usually, the first indication of flying into restricted visibility conditions is the gradual disappearance of lights on the ground. If the lights begin to take on an appearance of being surrounded by a cotton ball or glow, the pilot should use caution in attempting further flight in that same direction. Remember that if a descent must be made through any fog, smoke, or haze in order to land, the visibility is considerably less when looking horizontally through the restriction than it is when looking straight down through it from above. Under no circumstances should a VFR night flight be made during poor or marginal weather conditions. The practice of maneuvers at night should be conducted within a designated practice area, or at least in an area that is known to be comparatively free from other air traffic. The learning pilot should practice and acquire competency in straight and level flight, straight climbs and descents, level turns, and climbing and descending turns. Recovery from unusual attitudes should also be practiced, but only on dual flights with a competent flight instructor. In spite of fewer landmarks or checkpoints, night cross-country flights present no particular problem if pre-planning is adequate and the pilot continues to monitor position, time estimates, and fuel consumed. Crossing large bodies of water on night flights could be potentially hazardous, not only from the standpoint of landing or ditching in the water should it become necessary, but also because the horizon may blend in with the water, in which case control of the airplane becomes difficult. During haze conditions over open water, the horizon will become obscure and may result in loss of spatial orientation. Even on clear nights, the stars may be reflected on the water surface, which could appear as a continuous array of lights, thus making the horizon difficult to identify. Lighted runways, buildings, or other objects may cause illusions to the pilot when seen from different altitudes. At an altitude of 2,000 feet, a group of lights on an object may be seen individually, while at 5,000 feet or higher, the same lights could appear to be one solid light mass. These illusions may become quite acute with altitude changes, and if not overcome, could present problems in respect to approaches to lighted runways. Landing approaches and landings. When arriving at the airport to enter the traffic pattern and land, it is important that the runway lights and other airport lighting be identified as early as possible. If the airport layout is unfamiliar to the pilot, sighting of the runway may be difficult until very close in due to the maze of lights observed in the area. The pilot should, therefore, fly toward the airport beacon light until the lights outlining the runway are distinguishable. To fly a traffic pattern of the proper size and direction when there is little to see but a group of lights, the runway threshold and runway edge lights must be positively identified. Once seen, the approach threshold lights should be kept in sight throughout the airport traffic pattern and approach. Distance may be deceptive at night due to limited lighting conditions, lack of intervening references on the ground, and the inability of the pilot to compare the size and location of different ground objects. This also applies to the estimation of altitude and speed. Consequently, more dependence must be placed on flight instruments, particularly the altimeter and the airspeed indicator. Inexperienced pilots often have a tendency to make approaches and landings at night with excessive airspeed. Every effort should be made to execute the approach and landing in the same manner as during the day. A low, shallow approach is definitely inappropriate during a night operation. The altimeter and vertical speed indicator should be constantly cross-checked against the airplane's position along the base leg and final approach. After turning onto the final approach and aligning the airplane midway between the two rows of runway edge lights, the pilot should note and correct for any wind drift. Throughout the final approach, power should be used with coordinated pitch changes to provide positive control of the airplane, enabling the pilot to accurately adjust airspeed and descent angle. Where a visual approach slope indicator is installed, it is helpful in maintaining the proper approach angle. Usually, when approximately halfway along the final approach, the landing light should be turned on. Earlier use of the landing light may be ineffective since the light's beam will usually not reach the ground from higher altitudes and may be reflected back into the pilot's eyes by any existing haze, smoke, or fog. However, this disadvantage may be overshadowed by the safety advantage provided by using the Operation Lights On procedure in the terminal area. The roundout and touchdown should be made in the same manner as in day landings. Judgment of height, speed, and sink rate is impaired, however, by the scarcity of observable objects in the landing area. The inexperienced pilot may have a tendency to round out too high until attaining familiarity with the apparent height for the correct roundout position. To aid in determining the proper roundout point, It may be well to continue a constant approach descent until the landing light reflects on the runway, and tire marks on the runway or runway expansion joints can be seen clearly. At that point, the roundout for touchdown should be started smoothly and the throttle gradually reduced to idle as the airplane is touching down. During landings without the use of landing lights or where marks on the runway are indiscernible, the roundout may be started when the runway lights at the far end of the runway first appear to be rising higher than the airplane. This, of course, demands a smooth and very timely roundout and requires, in effect, that the pilot feel for the runway surface, using power and pitch changes as necessary for the airplane to settle softly on the runway. Night emergencies. Perhaps the pilot's greatest concern about flying a single-engine airplane at night is complete engine failure, even though adverse weather and poor pilot judgment account for most serious accidents. If the engine fails at night, the first step is to maintain positive control of the airplane. Do not panic. A normal glide should be established and maintained, and the airplane turned toward an airport or away from congested areas. A check should be made to determine the cause of the engine failure, such as the position of magneto switches, fuel selectors, or primer. If possible, the cause of the malfunction should be corrected immediately and the engine restarted. Orientation with the wind direction should also be maintained to avoid a downwind landing. The landing lights should be checked at altitude and turned on in sufficient time to illuminate the terrain or obstacles along the flight path. If the landing lights are unusable and outside visual references are not available, the airplane should be held in level landing attitude until the ground is contacted. Most important of all, positive control of the airplane must be maintained at all times. Do not allow a stall to occur.